Disc 5.
Afterward, all that was faked turned bad and gave an unpleasant feeling. Romero's bullfighting gave real emotion because he kept the absolute purity of line in his movements and always quietly and calmly let the horns pass him close each time. He did not have to emphasize their closeness. Brett saw how something that was beautiful done close to the bull was ridiculous if it were done a little way off. I told her how since the death of Joselito, all the bullfighters had been developing a technique that simulated this appearance of danger in order to give a fake emotional feeling, while the bullfighter was really safe. Romero had the old thing, the holding of his purity of line through the maximum of exposure, while he dominated the bull by making him realize he was unattainable, while he prepared him for the killing. "I've never seen him do an awkward thing," Brett said.
"You won't until he gets frightened," I said.
"He'll never be frightened," Mike said. "He knows too damned much." "He knew everything when he started. The others can never learn what he was born with."
"And God, what looks," Brett said.
"I believe, you know, that she's falling in love with this bullfighter chap," Mike said.
"I wouldn't be surprised."
"Be a good chap, Jake. Don't tell her anything more about him. Tell her how they beat their old mothers."
"Tell me what drunks they are."
"Oh, frightful," Mike said. "Drunk all day and spend all their time beating their poor old mothers."
"He looks that way," Brett said.
"Doesn't he?" I said.
They had hitched the mules to the dead bull, and then the whips cracked. The men ran, and the mules, straining forward, their legs pushing, broke into a gallop, and the bull, one horn up, his head on its side, swept a swath smoothly across the sand and out the red gate.
"This next is the last one."
"Not really," Brett said.
She leaned forward on the barrera. Romero waved his picadors to their places, then stood, his cape against his chest, looking across the ring to where the bull would come out. After it was over, we went out and were pressed tight in the crowd.
"These bullfights are hell on one," Brett said. "I'm limp as a rag."
"Oh, you'll get a drink," Mike said.
The next day, Pedro Romero did not fight. It was Miura bulls and a very bad bullfight. The next day, there was no bullfight scheduled, but all day and all night, the fiesta kept on.
Chapter 16.
In the morning, it was raining. A fog had come over the mountains from the sea. You could not see the tops of the mountains. The plateau was dull and gloomy, and the shapes of the trees and the houses were changed. I walked out beyond the town to look at the weather. The bad weather was coming over the mountains from the sea. The flags in the square hung wet from the white poles, and the banners were wet and hung damp against the front of the houses, and in between the steady drizzle the rain came down and drove everyone under the arcades and made pools of water in the square, and the streets wet and dark and deserted. Yet the fiesta kept up without any pause. It was only driven under cover. The covered seats of the bull ring had been crowded with people sitting out of the rain, watching the concourse of Basque and Navarre dancers and singers, and afterward the Val Carlos dancers in their costumes danced down the street in the rain, the drums sounding hollow and damp, and the chiefs of the bands riding ahead on their big, heavy-footed horses, their costumes wet, the horses' coats wet in the rain. The crowd was in the cafes, and the dancers came in too, and sat, their tight-wound white legs under the tables, shaking the water from their belled caps, and spreading their red and purple jackets over the chairs to dry. It was raining hard outside. I left the crowd in the cafe and went over to the hotel to get shaved for dinner. I was shaving in my room when there was a knock on the door.
"Come in," I called.
Montoya walked in.
"How are you?" he said.
"Fine," I said.
"No bulls today."
"No," I said, "nothing but rain."
"Where are your friends?"
"Over at the Iruña."
Montoya smiled his embarrassed smile.
"Look," he said, "do you know the American ambassador?"
"Yes," I said, "everybody knows the American ambassador."
"He's here in town now."
"Yes," I said, "everybody's seen them."
"I've seen them too," Montoya said.
He didn't say anything. I went on shaving.
"Sit down," I said, "let me send for a drink."
"No, I have to go."
I finished shaving and put my face down into the bowl and washed it with cold water. Montoya was standing there looking more embarrassed.
Look, he said, I've just had a message from them at the Grand Hotel that they want Pedro Romero and Marcial Lalanda to come over for coffee tonight after dinner.
Well, I said it can't hurt Marcial any.
Marcial has been in San Sebastian all day. He drove over in a car this morning with Marques. I don't think they'll be back tonight.
Montoya stood embarrassed. He wanted me to say something.
Don't give Romero the message, I said.
You think so?
Absolutely.
Montoya was very pleased.
I wanted to ask you because you are an American, he said.
That's what I'd do.
Look, said Montoya, people take a boy like that. They don't know what he's worth. They don't know what he means. Any foreigner can flatter him. They start this Grand Hotel business and in 1 year they're through.
Like Al Gabino, I said.
Yes, like Al Gabino.
They're a fine lot, I said. There's one American woman down here now that collects bullfighters.
I know. They only want the young ones.
Yes, I said, the old ones get fat.
Or crazy like Gallo.
Well, I said, it's easy. All you have to do is not give him the message.
He's such a fine boy, said Montoya. He ought to stay with his own people. He shouldn't mix in that stuff.
Won't you have a drink? I asked.
No, said Montoya. I have to go.
He went out. I went downstairs and out the door and took a walk around through the arcades around the square. It was still raining. I looked in at the Aruña for the gang and they were not there, so I walked on around the square and back to the hotel. They were eating dinner in the downstairs dining room. They were well ahead of me and it was no use trying to catch them. Bill was buying shoe shines for Mike. Bootblacks opened the street door and each one Bill called over and started to work on Mike.
This is the 11th time my boots have been polished, Mike said. I say, Bill is an ass.
The bootblacks had evidently spread the report. Another came in.
Limpia botas? He said to Bill.
No, said Bill, for this, senor.
The bootblack knelt down beside the one at work and started on Mike's free shoe that shone already in the electric light.
Bill's a yell of laughter, Mike said.
I was drinking red wine and so far behind them that I felt a little uncomfortable about all this shoe shining. I looked around the room. At the next table was Pedro Romero. He stood up when I nodded and asked me to come over and meet a friend. His table was beside ours, almost touching. I met the friend, a Madrid bullfight critic, a little man with a drawn face. I told Romero how much I liked his work, and he was very pleased. We talked Spanish, and the critic knew a little French. I reached to our table for my wine bottle, but the critic took my arm. Romero laughed.
Drink here, he said in English.
He was very bashful about his English, but he was really very pleased with it, and as we went on talking, he brought out words he was not sure of and asked me about them. He was anxious to know the English for corrida de toros, the exact translation. Bullfight he was suspicious of. I explained that bullfight in Spanish was the lidia of a toro. The Spanish word corrida means in English the running of bulls. The French translation is course de toro. The critic put that in. There is no Spanish word for bullfight. Pedro Romero said he had learned a little English in Gibraltar. He was born in Ronda, that is not far above Gibraltar. He started bullfighting in Malaga in the bullfighting school there. He had only been at it 3 years. The bullfight critic joked him about the number of Malagueño expressions he used. His older brother was with him as a banderillero, but he did not live in this hotel. He lived in a smaller hotel with the other people who worked for Romero. He asked me how many times I had seen him in the ring. I told him only three. It was really only two, but I did not want to explain after I'd made the mistake.
Where did you see me the other time? In Madrid?
Yes, I lied. I'd read the accounts of his two appearances in Madrid in the bullfight papers, so I was all right.
The first or the second time?
The first.
I was very bad, he said. The second time I was better. You remember?
He turned to the critic. He was not at all embarrassed. He talked of his work as something altogether apart from himself. There was nothing conceited or braggartly about him.
I like it very much that you like my work, he said, but you haven't seen it yet. Tomorrow, if I get a good bull, I will try and show it to you.
When he said this, he smiled, anxious that neither the bullfight critic nor I would think he was boasting.
I am anxious to see it, the critic said. I would like to be convinced.
He doesn't like my work much, Romero turned to me. He was serious.
The critic explained that he liked it very much, but that so far it had been incomplete.
Wait till tomorrow if a good one comes out.
Have you seen the bulls for tomorrow? The critic asked me.
Yes, I saw them unloaded.
Pedro Romero leaned forward.
What did you think of them?
Very nice, I said. About 26 arrobas. Very short horns. Haven't you seen them?
Oh, yes, said Romero.
They won't weigh 26 arrobas, said the critic.
No, said Romero.
They've got bananas for horns, the critic said.
You call them bananas? Asked Romero.
He turned to me and smiled.
You wouldn't call them bananas.
No, I said, they're horns all right.
They're very short, said Pedro Romero.
Very, very short. Still, they aren't bananas.
I say, Jake, Brett called from the next table, you have deserted us.
Just temporarily, I said. We're talking bulls.
You are superior.
Tell them that bulls have no balls, Mike shouted.
He was drunk.
Romero looked at me inquiringly.
Drunk, I said. Borracho, muy borracho.
You might introduce your friends, Brett said.
She'd not stopped looking at Pedro Romero. I asked them if they would like to have coffee with us. They both stood up. Romero's face was very brown. He had very nice manners. I introduced them all around and they started to sit down, but there was not enough room, so we all moved over to the big table by the wall to have coffee. Mike ordered a bottle of Fundador and glasses for everybody. There was a lot of drunken talking.
Tell him I think writing is lousy, Bill said. Go on, tell him. Tell him I'm ashamed of being a writer.
Pedro Romero was sitting beside Brett and listening to her.
Go on, tell him, Bill said.
Romero looked up smiling.
This gentleman, I said, is a writer.
Romero was impressed.
This other one, too, I said, pointing at Cohn.
He looks like Villalta, Romero said, looking at Bill.
Rafael, doesn't he look like Villalta?
I can't see it, the critic said.
Really, Romero said in Spanish, he looks a lot like Villalta.
What does the drunken one do?
Nothing.
Is that why he drinks?
No, he's waiting to marry this lady.
Tell him bulls have no balls, Mike shouted, very drunk, from the other end of the table.
What does he say?
He's drunk.
Jake, Mike called, tell him bulls have no balls.
You understand? I said.
Yes.
I was sure he didn't, so it was all right.
Tell him Brett wants to see him put on those green pants.
Pipe down, Mike.
Tell him Brett is dying to know how he can get into those pants.
Pipe down.
During this, Romero was fingering his glass and talking with Brett. Brett was talking French and he was talking Spanish and a little English and laughing. Bill was filling the glasses.
Tell him Brett wants to come into...
Oh, pipe down, Mike, for Christ's sake. Romero looked up, smiling.
Pipe down. I know that, he said.
Just then Montoya came into the room. He started to smile at me. Then he saw Pedro Romero with a big glass of cognac in his hand, sitting laughing between me and a woman with bare shoulders at a table full of drunks. He did not even nod. Montoya went out of the room. Mike was on his feet, proposing a toast.
Let's all drink to...
he began. Pedro Romero, I said. Everybody stood up. Romero took it very seriously, and we touched glasses and drank it down, I rushing it a little because Mike was trying to make it clear that that was not at all what he was going to drink to. But it went off all right, and Pedro Romero shook hands with everyone, and he and the critic went out together.
My God, he's a lovely boy, Brett said, and how I would love to see him get into those clothes. He must use a shoehorn.
I started to tell him, Mike began, and Jake kept interrupting me.
Why did you interrupt me?
Do you think you talk Spanish better than I do?
Oh, shut up, Mike. Nobody interrupted you.
No, I'd like to get this settled.
He turned away from me.
Do you think you amount to something, Cohn? Do you think you belong here among us? People who are out to have a good time, for God's sake, don't be so noisy, Cohn.
Oh, cut it out, Mike, Cohn said.
Do you think Brett wants you here? Do you think you add to the party? Why don't you say something?
I said all I had to say the other night, Mike.
I'm not one of you literary chaps.
Mike stood shakily and leaned against the table.
I'm not clever, but I do know when I'm not wanted. Why don't you see when you're not wanted, Cohn? Go away. Go away, for God's sake. Take that sad Jewish face away. Don't you think I'm right?
He looked at us.
Sure, I said. Let's all go over to the Arunia. No, don't you think I'm right? I love that woman.
Oh, don't start that again. Do shove it along, Michael, Brett said.
Don't you think I'm right, Jake?
Cone still sat at the table. His face had the sallow yellow look it got when he was insulted, but somehow he seemed to be enjoying it, the childish, drunken heroics of it. It was his affair with a lady of title.
Jake, Mike said. He was almost crying. You know I'm right. Listen, you,
he turned to Cone.
Go away now.
But I won't go, Mike, said Cone.
Then I'll make you.
Mike started toward him around the table. Cone stood up and took off his glasses. He stood waiting, his face sallow, his hands fairly low, proudly and firmly waiting for the assault, ready to do battle for his lady love. I grabbed Mike. Come on to the cafe, I said. You can't hit him here in the hotel.
Good, said Mike. Good idea.
We started off. I looked back as Mike stumbled up the stairs and saw Cone putting his glasses on again. Bill was sitting at the table pouring another glass of Fundador. Brett was sitting looking straight ahead at nothing. Outside on the square it had stopped raining and the moon was trying to get through the clouds. There was a wind blowing. The military band was playing and the crowd was massed on the far side of the square where the fireworks specialist and his son were trying to send up fire balloons. A balloon would start up jerkily on a great bias and be torn by the wind or blown against the houses of the square. Some fell into the crowd. The magnesium flared and the fireworks exploded and chased about in the crowd. There was no one dancing in the square. The gravel was too wet. Brett came out with Bill and joined us. We stood in the crowd and watched Don Manuel Urquito, the fireworks king, standing on a little platform, carefully starting the balloons with sticks, standing above the heads of the crowd to launch the balloons off into the wind. The wind brought them all down, and Don Manuel Orquito's face was sweaty in the light of his complicated fireworks that fell into the crowd and charged and chased, sputtering and cracking between the legs of the people. The people shouted as each new luminous paper bubble careened, caught fire, and fell.
They're razzing Don Manuel, Bill said.
How do you know he's Don Manuel? Brett said.
His name's on the program, Don Manuel Orquito, the pirotecnico of esta ciudad. Globos Illuminados, Mike said. A collection of Globos Illuminados. That's what the paper said.
The wind blew the band music away.
I say, I wish one would go up, Brett said. That Don Manuel chap is furious.
He's probably worked for weeks fixing them to go off, spelling out Hail to San Fermin, Bill said. Globos Illuminados, Mike said. A bunch of bloody Globos Illuminados.
Come on, said Brett, we can't stand here.
Her ladyship wants a drink, Mike said.
How you know things, Brett said. Inside the cafe was crowded and very noisy. No one noticed us come in. We could not find a table. There was a great noise going on.
Come on, let's get out of here, Bill said.
Outside, the paseo was going in under the arcade. There were some English and Americans from Biarritz in sports clothes scattered at the tables. Some of the women stared at the people going by with lorgnons. We had acquired at some time a friend of Bill's from Biarritz. He was staying with another girl at the Grand Hotel. The other girl had a headache and had gone to bed.
Here's the pub, Mike said.
It was the Bar Milano, a small tough bar where you could get food and where they danced in the back room. We all sat down at a table and ordered a bottle of Fundador. The bar was not full. There was nothing going on.
This is a hell of a place, Bill said.
It's too early.
Let's take the bottle and come back later, Bill said. I don't want to sit here on a night like this.
Let's go and look at the English, Mike said. I love to look at the English.
They're awful, Bill said. Where do they all come from?
They come from Biarritz, Mike said. They come to see the last day of the quaint little Spanish fiesta.
I'll fester them, Bill said.
You're an extraordinarily beautiful girl.
Mike turned to Bill's friend.
When did you come here?
Come off it, Michael.
I say she is a lovely girl. Where have I been? Where have I been looking all this while? You're a lovely thing. Have we met? Come along with me and Bill. We're going to fester the English.
I'll fester them, Bill said. What the hell are they doing at this fiesta?
Come on, Mike said. Just us three. We're going to fester the bloody English.
I hope you're not English. I'm Scotch. I hate the English. I'm going to fester them. Come on, Bill.
Through the window we saw them, all three arm in arm, going toward the cafe. Rockets were going up in the square.
"I'm going to sit here," Brett said.
"I'll stay with you," Cohn said.
"Oh, don't," Brett said. "For God's sake, go off somewhere. Can't you see Jake and I want to talk?"
"I didn't," Cohn said. "I thought I'd sit here because I felt a little tight."
"What a hell of a reason for sitting with anyone. If you're tight, go to bed. Go on to bed."
"Was I rude enough to him?" Brett asked.
Cohn was gone.
"My God, I'm so sick of him."
"He doesn't add much to the gaiety."
"He depresses me so."
"He's behaved very badly."
"Damned badly. He had a chance to behave so well."
"He's probably waiting just outside the door now."
"Yes, he would. You know, I do know how he feels. He can't believe it didn't mean anything."
"I know.
Nobody else would behave as badly. Oh, I'm so sick of the whole thing. And Michael. Michael's been lovely, too."
"It's been damned hard on Mike."
"Yes, but he didn't need to be a swine."
"Everybody behaves badly," I said. "Give them the proper chance."
"You wouldn't behave badly."
Brett looked at me.
"I'd be as big an ass as Cohn," I said.
"Darling, don't let's talk a lot of rot."
"All right. Talk about anything you like."
"Don't be difficult. You're the only person I've got, and I feel rather awful tonight."
"You've got Mike."
"Yes, Mike. Hasn't he been pretty?"
"Well," I said, "it's been damned hard on Mike having Cohn around and seeing him with you."
"Don't I know it, darling. Please don't make me feel any worse than I do."
Brett was nervous as I'd never seen her before. She kept looking away from me and looking ahead at the wall.
"Want to go for a walk?"
"Yes, come on."
I corked up the Fundador bottle and gave it to the bartender.
"Let's have one more drink of that," Brett said. "My nerves are rotten."
We each drank a glass of the smooth Amontillado brandy.
"Come on," said Brett.
As we came out the door, I saw Cohn walk out from under the arcade.
"He was there," Brett said.
"He can't be away from you."
"Poor devil.
I'm not sorry for him. I hate him myself."
"I hate him too,"
she shivered.
"I hate his damned suffering."
We walked arm in arm down the side street, away from the crowd and the lights of the square. The street was dark and wet, and we walked along it to the fortifications at the edge of town. We passed wine shops, with light coming out from their doors onto the black, wet street, and sudden bursts of music.
"Want to go in?"
"No."
We walked out across the wet grass and onto the stone wall of the fortifications. I spread a newspaper on the stone, and Brett sat down. Across the plain it was dark, and we could see the mountains. The wind was high up and took the clouds across the moon. Below us were the dark pits of the fortifications. Behind were the trees and the shadow of the cathedral and the town silhouetted against the moon.
"Don't feel bad," I said.
"I feel like hell," Brett said. "Don't let's talk."
We looked out at the plain. The long lines of trees were dark in the moonlight. There were the lights of a car on the road climbing the mountain. Up on the top of the mountain we saw the lights of the fort. Below to the left was the river. It was high from the rain and black and smooth. Trees were dark along the banks. We sat and looked out. Brett stared straight ahead. Suddenly she shivered.
"It's cold."
"Want to walk back?"
"Through the park."
We climbed down. It was clouding over again. In the park it was dark under the trees.
"Do you still love me, Jake?"
"Yes," I said.
"Because I'm a goner," Brett said.
"How?"
"I'm a goner. I'm mad about the Romero boy. I'm in love with him, I think."
"I wouldn't be if I were you."
"I can't help it. I'm a goner. It's tearing me all up inside."
"Don't do it."
"I can't help it. I've never been able to help anything."
"You ought to stop it."
"How can I stop it? I can't stop things. Feel that?"
Her hand was trembling.
"I'm like that all through."
"You oughtn't to do it."
"I can't help it. I'm a goner now anyway. Don't you see the difference?"
"No."
"I've got to do something. I've got to do something I really want to do. I've lost my self-respect."
"You don't have to do that."
"Oh, darling, don't be difficult. What do you think it's meant to have that damned Jew about, and Mike the way he's acted?"
"Sure."
"I can't just stay tight all the time."
"No."
"Oh, darling, please stay by me. Please stay by me and see me through this."
"Sure."
"I don't say it's right. It is right, though, for me. God knows I've never felt such a bitch."
What do you want me to do? Come on, Brett said. Let's go and find him.
Together we walked down the gravel path in the park in the dark, under the trees, and then out from under the trees, and past the gate into the street that led into town. Pedro Romero was in the cafe. He was at a table with other bullfighters and bullfight critics. They were smoking cigars. When we came in, they looked up. Romero smiled and bowed. We sat down at a table halfway down the room.
Ask him to come over and have a drink.
Not yet, he'll come over.
I can't look at him.
He's nice to look at, I said.
I've always done just what I wanted.
I know.
I do feel such a bitch.
Well, I said.
My God, said Brett, the things a woman goes through.
Yes.
Oh, I do feel such a bitch.
I looked across at the table. Pedro Romero smiled. He said something to the other people at the table and stood up. He came over to our table. I stood up and we shook hands. Won't you have a drink?
You must have a drink with me, he said.
He seated himself, asking Brett's permission without saying anything. He had very nice manners, but he kept on smoking his cigar. It went well with his face. You like cigars? I asked.
Oh, yes, I always smoke cigars.
It was part of his system of authority. It made him seem older. I noticed his skin. It was clear and smooth and very brown. There was a triangular scar on his cheekbone. I saw he was watching Brett. He felt there was something between them. He must have felt it when Brett gave him her hand. He was being very careful. I think he was sure, but he did not want to make any mistake. You fight tomorrow? I said.
Yes, he said. Algabeno was hurt today in Madrid, did you hear?
No, I said, badly. He shook his head.
Nothing. Here.
He showed his hand. Brett reached out and spread the fingers apart.
Oh, he said in English. You tell fortunes?
Sometimes. Do you mind?
No, I like it.
He spread his hand flat on the table.
Tell me I live for always and be a millionaire.
He was still very polite, but he was surer of himself.
Look, he said. Do you see any bulls in my hand?
He laughed. His hand was very fine and the wrist was small.
There are thousands of bulls, Brett said.
She was not at all nervous now. She looked lovely.
Good, Romero laughed.
At 1,000 euros apiece, he said to me in Spanish.
Tell me some more. It's a good hand, Brett said. I think he'll live a long time. Say it to me, not to your friend. I said you'd live a long time.
I know it, Romero said.
I'm never going to die.
I tapped with my fingertips on the table. Romero saw it. He shook his head.
No, don't do that. The bulls are my best friends.
I translated to Brett.
You kill your friends? She asked.
Always, he said in English and laughed.
So they don't kill me.
He looked at her across the table.
You know English well?
Yes, he said, pretty well sometimes. But I must not let anybody know. It would be very bad, a torero who speaks English.
Why? Asked Brett. It would be bad. The people would not like it, not yet.
Why not?
They would not like it. Bullfighters are not like that.
What are bullfighters like? He laughed and tipped his hat down over his eyes and changed the angle of his cigar and the expression of his face.
Like at the table, he said.
I glanced over. He had mimicked exactly the expression of Nacional. He smiled, his face natural again.
No, I must forget English.
Don't forget it yet, Brett said.
No?
No.
All right.
He laughed again.
I would like a hat like that, Brett said.
Good. I'll get you one.
Right. See that you do.
I will.
I'll get you one tonight.
I stood up. Romero rose too. Sit down, I said. I must go and find our friends and bring them here. He looked at me. It was a final look to ask if it were understood. It was understood, all right.
Sit down, Brett said to him. You must teach me Spanish.
He sat down and looked at her across the table. I went out. The hard-eyed people at the bullfighter table watched me go.
It was not pleasant. When I came back and looked in the cafe 20 minutes later, Brett and Pedro Romero were gone. The coffee glasses and our three empty cognac glasses were on the table. A waiter came with a cloth and picked up the glasses and mopped off the table. Chapter 17. Outside the Bar Milano, I found Bill and Mike and Edna. Edna was the girl's name.
"We've been thrown out," Edna said.
"By the police," said Mike. "There's some people in there that don't like me."
"I've kept them out of 4 fights," Edna said. "You've got to help me."
Bill's face was red.
"Come back in, Edna," he said. "Go in there and dance with Mike."
"It's silly," Edna said. "There'll just be another row."
"Damn beer, it's swine," Bill said. "Come on," Mike said. "After all, it's a pub. They can't occupy a whole pub." "Good old Mike," Bill said. "Damned English swine, come here and insult Mike and try and spoil the fiesta." "They're so bloody," Mike said. "I hate the English." "They can't insult Mike," Bill said. "Mike is a swell fellow. They can't insult Mike. I won't stand it. Who cares if he is a damn bankrupt?"
His voice broke.
"Who cares?" Mike said. "I don't care. Jake doesn't care. Do you care?"
"No," Edna said. "Are you a bankrupt?"
"Of course I am. You don't care, do you, Bill?"
Bill put his arm around Mike's shoulder.
"I wish to hell I was a bankrupt. I'd show those bastards."
"They're just English," Mike said. "It never makes any difference what the English say."
"The dirty swine," Bill said. "I'm going to clean them out."
"Bill," Edna looked at me. "Please don't go in again, Bill. They're so stupid."
"That's it," said Mike. "They're stupid. I knew that's what it was." "They can't say things like that about Mike," Bill said.
"Do you know them?" I asked Mike.
"No, I never saw them. They say they know me." "I won't stand it," Bill said.
"Come on, let's go over to the Suizo," I said.
"They're a bunch of Edna's friends from Biarritz," Bill said.
"They're simply stupid," Edna said.
"One of them's Charlie Blackman from Chicago," Bill said.
"I was never in Chicago," Mike said.
Edna started to laugh and could not stop.
"Take me away from here," she said. "You bankrupts."
"What kind of a row was it?" I asked Edna. We were walking across the square to the Suizo. Bill was gone.
"I don't know what happened, but someone had the police called to keep Mike out of the back room. There were some people that had known Mike at Cannes. What's the matter with Mike?"
"Probably he owes them money," I said. "That's what people usually get bitter about."
In front of the ticket booths out in the square, there were 2 lines of people waiting. They were sitting on chairs or crouching on the ground with blankets and newspapers around them. They were waiting for the wickets to open in the morning to buy tickets for the bullfight. The night was clearing and the moon was out. Some of the people in the line were sleeping. At the Café Suizo, we had just sat down and ordered Fundador when Robert Cohn came up.
"Where's Brett?" he asked.
"I don't know."
"She was with you."
"She must have gone to bed."
"She's not."
"I don't know where she is." His face was sallow under the light. He was standing up.
"Tell me where she is."
"Sit down," I said. "I don't know where she is."
"The hell you don't."
"You can shut your face."
"Tell me where Brett is."
"I'll not tell you a damn thing."
"You know where she is."
"If I did, I wouldn't tell you."
"Oh, go to hell, Cone," Mike called from the table. "Brett's gone off with the bullfighter chap. They're on their honeymoon."
"You shut up."
"Oh, go to hell," Mike said languidly.
"Is that where she is?" Cone turned to me.
"Go to hell."
"She was with you. Is that where she is?"
"Go to hell."
"I'll make you tell me."
He stepped forward.
"You damned pimp."
I swung at him and he ducked. I saw his face duck sideways in the light. He hit me and I sat down on the pavement. As I started to get on my feet, he hit me twice. I went down backward under a table. I tried to get up and felt I did not have any legs. I felt I must get on my feet and try and hit him. Mike helped me up. Someone poured a carafe of water on my head. Mike had an arm around me, and I found I was sitting on a chair. Mike was pulling at my ears.
"I say, you were cold," Mike said.
"Where the hell were you?"
"Oh, I was around."
"You didn't want to mix in it?"
"He knocked Mike down, too," Edna said.
"He didn't knock me out," Mike said. "I just lay there."
"Does this happen every night at your fiestas?" Edna asked. "Wasn't that Mr. Cohn?"
"I'm all right," I said. "My head's a little wobbly." There were several waiters and a crowd of people standing around.
"Vaya," said Mike. "Get away. Go on."
The waiters moved the people away.
"It was quite a thing to watch," Edna said. "He must be a boxer."
"He is."
"I wish Bill had been here," Edna said. "I'd like to have seen Bill knocked down, too. I've always wanted to see Bill knocked down. He's so big."
"I was hoping he would knock down a waiter," Mike said, "and get arrested. I'd like to see Mr. Robert Cohn in jail."
"No," I said.
"Oh, no," said Edna. "You don't mean that."
"I do, though," Mike said. "I'm not one of these chaps likes being knocked about. I never play games, even."
Mike took a drink.
"I never liked to hunt, you know. There was always the danger of having a horse fall on you. How do you feel, Jake?"
"All right."
"You're nice," Edna said to Mike. "Are you really a bankrupt?"
"I'm a tremendous bankrupt," Mike said. "I owe money to everybody."
"Don't you owe any money?"
"Tons." "I owe everybody money," Mike said. "I borrowed 100 pesetas from Montoya tonight."
"The hell you did," I said.
"I'll pay it back," Mike said. "I always pay everything back."
"That's why you're a bankrupt, isn't it?" Edna said.
I stood up. I'd heard them talking from a long way away. It all seemed like some bad play. "I'm going over to the hotel," I said. Then I heard them talking about me.
"Is he all right?" Edna asked.
"We'd better walk with him."
"I'm all right," I said. "Don't come. I'll see you all later."
I walked away from the cafe. They were sitting at the table. I looked back at them and at the empty tables. There was a waiter sitting at one of the tables with his head in his hands. Walking across the square to the hotel, everything looked new and changed. I'd never seen the trees before. I'd never seen the flagpoles before, nor the front of the theater. It was all different. I felt as I felt once coming home from an out-of-town football game. I was carrying a suitcase with my football things in it, and I walked up the street from the station in the town I had lived in all my life, and it was all new. They were raking the lawns and burning leaves in the road, and I stopped for a long time and watched. It was all strange. Then I went on, and my feet seemed to be a long way off, and everything seemed to come from a long way off, and I could hear my feet walking a great distance away. I had been kicked in the head early in the game. It was like that crossing the square. It was like that going up the stairs in the hotel. Going up the stairs took a long time, and I had the feeling that I was carrying my suitcase. There was a light in the room. Bill came out and met me in the hall.
"Say," he said, "go up and see Cohn. He's been in a jam and he's asking for you."
"The hell with him."
"Go on. Go on up and see him."
I did not want to climb another flight of stairs.
"What are you looking at me that way for?"
"I'm not looking at you. Go on up and see Cohn. He's in bad shape."
"You were drunk a little while ago," I said.
"I'm drunk now," Bill said, "but you go up and see Cohn. He wants to see you."
"All right," I said. It was just a matter of climbing more stairs. I went on up the stairs carrying my phantom suitcase. I walked down the hall to Cohn's room. The door was shut, and I knocked.
"Who is it?"
"Barnes."
"Come in, Jake."
I opened the door and went in and set down my suitcase. There was no light in the room. Cohn was lying face down on the bed in the dark.
"Hello, Jake."
"Don't call me Jake." I stood by the door. It was just like this that I'd come home. Now it was a hot bath that I needed. A deep, hot bath to lie back in.
"Where's the bathroom?" I asked.
Cohn was crying. There he was, face down on the bed, crying. He had on a white polo shirt, the kind he'd worn at Princeton.
"I'm sorry, Jake. Please forgive me."
"Forgive you, hell."
"Please forgive me, Jake."
I did not say anything. I stood there by the door.
"I was crazy. You must see how it was."
"Oh, that's all right."
"I couldn't stand it about Brett."
"You called me a pimp." I did not care. I wanted a hot bath. I wanted a hot bath and deep water.
"I know. Please, don't remember it. I was crazy."
"That's all right." He was crying. His voice was funny. He lay there in his white shirt on the bed in the dark. His polo shirt.
"I'm going away in the morning."
He was crying without making any noise.
"I just couldn't stand it about Brett.
I've been through hell, Jake. It's been simply hell. When I met her down here, Brett treated me as though I were a perfect stranger. I just couldn't stand it. We lived together at San Sebastian. I suppose you know it. I can't stand it anymore.
He lay there on the bed. Well, I said, I'm going to take a bath.
You were the only friend I had, and I loved Brett so.
Well, I said, so long.
I guess it isn't any use, he said. I guess it isn't any damn use.
What?
Everything. Please say you forgive me, Jake.
Sure, I said. It's all right.
I felt so terribly. I've been through such hell, Jake. Now everything's gone. Everything.
Well, I said, so long. I've got to go. He rolled over, sat on the edge of the bed, and then stood up.
So long, Jake, he said. You'll shake hands, won't you?
Sure, why not? We shook hands. In the dark, I could not see his face very well. Well, I said, see you in the morning.
I'm going away in the morning.
Oh, yes, I said. I went out. Cone was standing in the door of the room.
Are you all right, Jake?
He asked. Oh, yes, I said, I'm all right. I could not find the bathroom. After a while, I found it. There was a deep stone tub. I turned on the taps and the water would not run. I sat down on the edge of the bathtub. When I got up to go, I found I had taken off my shoes. I hunted for them and found them and carried them downstairs. I found my room and went inside and undressed and got into bed. I woke with a headache and the noise of the bands going by in the street. I remembered I had promised to take Bill's friend Edna to see the bulls go through the street and into the ring. I dressed and went downstairs and out into the cold early morning. People were crossing the square, hurrying toward the bull ring. Across the square were the two lines of men in front of the ticket booths. They were still waiting for the tickets to go on sale at 7 o'clock. I hurried across the street to the cafe. The waiter told me that my friends had been there and gone. How many were they?
Two gentlemen and a lady.
That was all right. Bill and Mike were with Edna. She'd been afraid last night they would pass out. That was why I was to be sure to take her. I drank the coffee and hurried with the other people toward the bull ring. I was not groggy now. There was only a bad headache. Everything looked sharp and clear, and the town smelt of the early morning. The stretch of ground from the edge of the town to the bull ring was muddy. There was a crowd all along the fences that led to the ring, and the outside balconies and the top of the bull ring were solid with people. I heard the rocket, and I knew I could not get into the ring in time to see the bulls come in, so I shoved through the crowd to the fence. I was pushed close against the planks of the fence. Between the two fences of the runway, the police were clearing the crowd along. They walked or trotted on into the bull ring. Then people commenced to come running. A drunk slipped and fell. Two policemen grabbed him and rushed him over to the fence. The crowd were running fast now. There was a great shout from the crowd, and putting my head through between the boards, I saw the bulls just coming out of the street into the long running pen. They were going fast and gaining on the crowd. Just then another drunk started out from the fence with a blouse in his hands. He wanted to do cape work with the bulls. The two policemen tore out, collared him, one hit him with a club, and they dragged him against the fence and stood flattened out against the fence as the last of the crowd and the bulls went by. There were so many people running ahead of the bulls that the mass thickened and slowed up going through the gate into the ring, and as the bulls passed, galloping together, heavy, muddy-sided, horns swinging, one shot ahead, caught a man in the running crowd in the back and lifted him in the air. Both the man's arms were by his sides. His head went back as the horn went in, and the bull lifted him and then dropped him. The bull picked another man running in front, but the man disappeared into the crowd, and the crowd was through the gate and into the ring with the bulls behind them. The red door of the ring went shut. The crowd on the outside balconies of the bull ring were pressing through to the inside. There was a shout, then another shout. The man who had been gored lay face down in the trampled mud. People climbed over the fence, and I could not see the man because the crowd was so thick around him. From inside the ring came the shouts. Each shout meant a charge by some bull into the crowd. You could tell by the degree of intensity in the shout how bad a thing it was that was happening. Then the rocket went up that meant the steers had gotten the bulls out of the ring and into the corrals. I left the fence and started back toward the town. Back in the town, I went to the cafe to have a second coffee and some buttered toast. The waiters were sweeping out the cafe and mopping off the tables. One came over and took my order.
Anything happen at the encierro?
I didn't see it all. One man was badly cogido.
Where?
Here. I put one hand on the small of my back, and the other on my chest, where it looked as though the horn must have come through. The waiter nodded his head and swept the crumbs from the table with his cloth.
Badly cogido, he said. All for sport, all for pleasure.
He went away and came back with the long-handled coffee and milk pots. He poured the milk and coffee. It came out of the long spouts in two streams into the big cup. The waiter nodded his head.
Badly cogido through the back, he said.
He put the pots down on the table and sat down in the chair at the table.
A big horn wound. All for fun, just for fun. What do you think of that?
I don't know.
That's it. All for fun. Fun, you understand.
You're not an aficionado?
Me? What are bulls? Animals. Brute animals.
He stood up and put his hand on the small of his back.
Right through the back. A cornada right through the back. For fun, you understand.
He shook his head and walked away, carrying the coffee pots. Two men were going by in the street. The waiter shouted to them. They were grave-looking. One shook his head.
Muerto, he called.
The waiter nodded his head. The two men went on. They were on some errand. The waiter came over to my table.
You hear? Muerto. Dead. He's dead, with a horn through him. All for morning fun. Es muy flamenco.
It's bad.
Not for me, the waiter said. No fun in that for me.
Later in the day, we learned that the man who was killed was named Vicente Girones and came from near Tafalla. The next day in the paper, we read that he was 28 years old and had a farm, a wife, and two children. He had continued to come to the fiesta each year after he was married. The next day, his wife came in from Tafalla to be with the body, and the day after, there was a service in the chapel of San Fermin, and the coffin was carried to the railway station by members of the Dancing and Drinking Society of Tafalla. The drums marched ahead, and there was music on the fifes, and behind the men who carried the coffin walked the wife and two children. Behind them marched all the members of the Dancing and Drinking Societies of Pamplona, Estella, Tafalla, and Sangüesa, who could stay over for the funeral. The coffin was loaded into the baggage car of the train, and the widow and the two children rode, sitting, all three together, in an open third-class railway carriage. The train started with a jerk and then ran smoothly, going down grade around the edge of the plateau and out into the fields of grain that blew in the wind on the plain on the way to Tafalla. The bull who killed Vicente Girones was named Bocanegra, was number 118 of the bull breeding establishment of Sanchez Taberno, and was killed by Pedro Romero as the third bull of that same afternoon. His ear was cut by popular acclamation and given to Pedro Romero, who in turn gave it to Brett, who wrapped it in a handkerchief belonging to myself, and left both ear and handkerchief, along with a number of Murati cigarette stubs, shoved far back in the drawer of the bed table that stood beside her bed in the Hotel Montoya in Pamplona. Back in the hotel, the night watchman was sitting on a bench inside the door. He had been there all night and was very sleepy. He stood up as I came in. Three of the waitresses came in at the same time. They had been to the morning show at the Bullring. They went upstairs laughing. I followed them upstairs and went into my room. I took off my shoes and lay down on the bed. The window was open onto the balcony and the sunlight was bright in the room. I did not feel sleepy. It must have been 3:30 when I had gone to bed and the bands had waked me at 6. My jaw was sore on both sides. I felt it with my thumb and fingers. That damn cone. He should have hit somebody the first time he was insulted and then gone away. He was so sure that Brett loved him. He was going to stay, and true love would conquer all. Someone knocked on the door.
Come in.
It was Bill and Mike. They sat down on the bed.
Some encierro, Bill said. Some encierro.
I say, weren't you there? Mike asked. Ring for some beer, Bill.
What a morning, Bill said.
He mopped off his face.
My God, what a morning! And here's old Jake. Old Jake, the human punching bag.
What happened inside?
Good God, Bill said. What happened, Mike?
There were these bulls coming in, Mike said. Just ahead of them was the crowd, and some chap tripped and brought the whole lot of them down.
And the bulls all came in right over them, Bill said.
I heard them yell.
That was Edna, Bill said. Chaps kept coming out and waving their shirts. One bull went along the Barrera and hooked everybody over. They took about 20 chaps to the infirmary, Mike said. What a morning, Bill said. The damn police kept arresting chaps that wanted to go and commit suicide with the bulls. The steers took them in the end, Mike said. It took about an hour. It was really about a quarter of an hour, Mike objected. Oh, go to hell, Bill said. You've been in the war. It was 2 hours and a half for me. Where's that beer? Mike asked. What did you do with the lovely Edna?
We took her home just now. She's gone to bed.
How did she like it?
Fine. We told her it was just like that every morning.
She was impressed, Mike said.
She wanted us to go down in the ring, too, Bill said. She likes action.
I said it wouldn't be fair to my creditors, Mike said.
What a morning, Bill said, and what a night.
How's your jaw, Jake? Mike asked.
Sore, I said.
Bill laughed.
Why didn't you hit him with a chair?
You can talk, Mike said. He'd have knocked you out, too. I never saw him hit me. I rather think I saw him just before, and then quite suddenly I was sitting down in the street and Jake was lying under a table.
Where did he go afterward? I asked.
Here she is, Mike said. Here's the beautiful lady with the beer.
The chambermaid put the tray with the beer bottles and glasses down on the table.
Now bring up three more bottles, Mike said.
Where did Cone go after he hit me? I asked Bill.
Don't you know about that?
Mike was opening a beer bottle. He poured the beer into one of the glasses, holding the glass close to the bottle.
Really? Bill asked.
Why, he went in and found Brett and the bullfighter chap in the bullfighter's room, then he massacred the poor bloody bullfighter.
No.
Yes.
What a night, Bill said.
He nearly killed the poor bloody bullfighter. Then Cone wanted to take Brett away. Wanted to make an honest woman of her, I imagine. Damned touching scene.
He took a long drink of the beer.
He is an ass.
What happened?
Brett gave him what for. She told him off.
I think she was rather good.
I'll bet she was, Bill said.
Then Cone broke down and cried and wanted to shake hands with the bullfighter fellow. He wanted to shake hands with Brett, too.
I know, he shook hands with me.
Did he? Well, they weren't having any of it. The bullfighter fellow was rather good. He didn't say much, but he kept getting up and getting knocked down again. Cone couldn't knock him out. It must have been damned funny.
Where did you hear all this?
Brett, I saw her this morning.
What happened, finally?
It seems the bullfighter fellow was sitting on the bed. He'd been knocked down about 15 times, and he wanted to fight some more. Brett held him and wouldn't let him get up. He was weak, but Brett couldn't hold him, and he got up. Then Cone said he wouldn't hit him again. Said he couldn't do it. Said it would be wicked. So the bullfighter chap sort of rather staggered over to him. Cone went back against the wall.
So you won't hit me?
No, said Cone, I'd be ashamed to. So the bullfighter fellow hit him just as hard as he could in the face and then sat down on the floor. He couldn't get up, Brett said. Cone wanted to pick him up and carry him to the bed. He said if Cone helped him, he'd kill him, and he'd kill him anyway this morning if Cone wasn't out of town. Cone was crying, and Brett had told him off, and he wanted to shake hands. I've told you that before.
Tell the rest, Bill said.
It seems the bullfighter chap was sitting on the floor. He was waiting to get strength enough to get up and hit Cone again. Brett wasn't having any shaking hands, and Cone was crying and telling her how much he loved her, and she was telling him not to be a ruddy ass. Then Cone leaned down to shake hands with the bullfighter fellow. No hard feelings, you know, all for forgiveness. And the bullfighter chap hit him in the face again.
That's quite a kid, Bill said.
He ruined Cone, Mike said. You know, I don't think Cone will ever want to knock people about again.
When did you see Brett?
This morning. She came in to get some things. She's looking after this Romero lad.
He poured out another bottle of beer.
Brett's rather cut up, but she loves looking after people. That's how we came to go off together. She was looking after me.
I know, I said.
I'm rather drunk, Mike said. I think I'll stay rather drunk. This is all awfully amusing, but it's not too pleasant. It's not too pleasant for me.
He drank off the beer.
I gave Brett what for, you know. I said if she would go about with Jews and bullfighters and such people, she must expect trouble. He leaned forward. I say, Jake, do you mind if I drink that bottle of yours? She'll bring you another one. Please, I said, I wasn't drinking it anyway. Mike started to open the bottle. Would you mind opening it? I pressed up the wire fastener and poured it for him. You know, Mike went on, Brett was rather good. She's always rather good. I gave her a fearful hiding about Jews and bullfighters and all those sort of people, and you know what she said? Yes, I've had such a hell of a happy life with the British aristocracy. He took a drink. That was rather good. Ashley, the chap she got the title from, was a sailor, you know, 9th Baronet. When he came home, he wouldn't sleep in a bed, always made Brett sleep on the floor. Finally, when he got really bad, he used to tell her he'd kill her. Always slept with a loaded service revolver. Brett used to take the shells out when he'd gone to sleep. She hasn't had an absolutely happy life, Brett. Damned shame, too. She enjoys things so. He stood up. His hand was shaky. I'm going in the room. Try and get a little sleep. He smiled. We go too long without sleep in these fiestas. I'm going to start now and get plenty of sleep. Damn bad thing not to get sleep. Makes you frightfully nervy. We'll see you at noon at the Aruña, Bill said. Mike went out the door. We heard him in the next room. He rang the bell and the chambermaid came and knocked at the door. Bring up half a dozen bottles of beer and a bottle of Fundador, Mike told her. Si, senorito. I'm going to bed, Bill said. Poor old Mike. I had a hell of a row about him last night. Where, at that Milano place? Yes. There was a fella there that had helped pay Brett and Mike out of Cannes once. He was damned nasty. I know the story. I didn't. Nobody ought to have a right to say things about Mike. That's what makes it bad. They oughtn't to have any right. I wish to hell they didn't have any right. I'm going to bed. Was anybody killed in the ring? I don't think so, just badly hurt. A man was killed outside in the runway. Was there? Said Bill. Chapter 18. At noon we were all at the cafe. It was crowded. We were eating shrimps and drinking beer. The town was crowded. Every street was full. Big motor cars from Biarritz and San Sebastian kept driving up and parking around the square. They brought people for the bullfight. Sightseeing cars came up, too. There was one with 25 English women in it. They sat in the big white car and looked through their glasses at the fiesta. The dancers were all quite drunk. It was the last day of the fiesta. The fiesta was solid and unbroken, but the motor cars and tourist cars made little islands of onlookers. When the cars emptied, the onlookers were absorbed into the crowd. You did not see them again except as sport clothes, odd-looking, at a table among the closely packed peasants in black smocks. The fiesta absorbed even the Biarritz English so that you did not see them unless you passed close to a table. All the time there was music in the street. The drums kept on pounding and the pipes were going. Inside the cafes, men with their hands gripping the table or on each other's shoulders were singing the hard-voiced singing. Here comes Brett, Bill said. I looked and saw her coming through the crowd in the square, walking, her head up as though the fiesta were being staged in her honor, and she found it pleasant and amusing. Hello, you chaps, she said. I say, I have a thirst. Get another big beer, Bill said to the waiter. Shrimps? Is Cone gone? Brett asked. Yes, Bill said. He hired a car. The beer came. Brett started to lift the glass mug and her hand shook. She saw it and smiled, and leaned forward and took a long sip. Good beer. Very good, I said. I was nervous about Mike. I did not think he had slept. He must have been drinking all the time, but he seemed to be under control. I heard Conan hurt you, Jake, Brett said. No, knocked me out, that was all. I say he did hurt Pedro Romero, Brett said. He hurt him most badly. How is he? He'll be all right. He won't go out of the room. Does he look badly? Very. He was really hurt. I told him I wanted to pop out and see you chaps for a minute. Is he going to fight? Rather. I'm going with you, if you don't mind. How's your boyfriend?
Mike asked. He had not listened to anything that Brett had said.
"Brett's got a bullfighter," he said. "She had a Jew named Cone, but he turned out badly."
Brett stood up.
"I am not going to listen to that sort of rot from you, Michael. How's your boyfriend?"
"Damned well," Brett said. "Watch him this afternoon."
"Brett's got a bullfighter," Mike said. "A beautiful bloody bullfighter."
"Would you mind walking over with me? I want to talk to you, Jake."
"Tell him all about your bullfighter," Mike said. "Oh, to hell with your bullfighter."
He tipped the table so that all the beers and the dish of shrimps went over in a crash.
"Come on," Brett said. "Let's get out of this."
In the crowd crossing the square, I said, "How is it?"
"I'm not going to see him after lunch until the fight. His people come in and dress him. They're very angry about me," he says.
Brett was radiant. She was happy. The sun was out and the day was bright.
"I feel altogether changed," Brett said. "You've no idea, Jake."
"Anything you want me to do?"
"No, just go to the fight with me."
"We'll see you at lunch?"
"No, I'm eating with him."
We were standing under the arcade at the door of the hotel. They were carrying tables out and setting them up under the arcade.
"Want to take a turn out to the park?" Brett asked. "I don't want to go up yet. I fancy he's sleeping."
We walked along past the theater and out of the square and along through the barracks of the fair, moving with the crowd between the lines of booths. We came out on a cross street that led to the Paseo de Sarasate. You could see the crowd walking there, all the fashionably dressed people. They were making the turn at the upper end of the park.
"Don't let's go there," Brett said. "I don't want staring at just now."
We stood in the sunlight. It was hot and good after the rain and the clouds from the sea.
"I hope the wind goes down," Brett said. "It's very bad for him."
"So do I."
"He says the bulls are all right."
"They're good."
"Is that San Fermín's?"
Brett looked at the yellow wall of the chapel. "Yes, where the show started on Sunday."
"Let's go in, do you mind? I'd rather like to pray a little for him or something."
We went in through the heavy leather door that moved very lightly. It was dark inside. Many people were praying. You saw them as your eyes adjusted themselves to the half-light. We knelt at one of the long wooden benches. After a little, I felt Brett stiffen beside me and saw she was looking straight ahead.
"Come on," she whispered throatily. "Let's get out of here. Makes me damned nervous."
Outside in the hot brightness of the street, Brett looked up at the treetops in the wind. The praying had not been much of a success.
"Don't know why I get so nervy in church," Brett said. "Never does me any good."
We walked along.
"I'm damned bad for a religious atmosphere," Brett said. "I've the wrong type of face."
"You know," Brett said, "I'm not worried about him at all. I just feel happy about him."
"Good. I wish the wind would drop, though."
"It's liable to go down by 5 o'clock.
"Let's hope."
"You might pray," I laughed.
"Never does me any good. I've never gotten anything I prayed for. Have you?"
"Oh, yes."
"Oh, rot," said Brett. "Oh, maybe it works for some people, though. You don't look very religious, Jake."
"I'm pretty religious."
"Oh, rot," said Brett. "Don't stop proselytizing today. Today's going to be bad enough as it is."
It was the first time I had seen her in the old, happy, careless way since before she went off with Cone. We were back again in front of the hotel. All the tables were set now, and already several were filled with people eating.
"Do look after Mike," Brett said. "Don't let him get too bad."
"Your friends have gone upstairs," the German maître d'hôtel said in English. He was a continual eavesdropper.
Brett turned to him.
"Thank you so much. Have you anything else to say?"
"No, ma'am."
"Good," said Brett.
"Save us a table for three," I said to the German. He smiled his dirty little pink and white smile.
"Is madam eating here?"
"No," Brett said.
"Then I think a table for two will be enough."
This book is continued on Disc 6.